Hello and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC, so a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It is a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I would like to introduce you to Rachel Korchinski, who's doing a PhD in chemistry under the supervision of Dr. Philip Jessup and a co-supervision by Dr. Michael Cunningham. Welcome to GradChat, Rachel.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for coming in. We're excited to learn all about your research today. And before we kind of dive into where you're currently at in your PhD, I was curious to know a little bit about what brought you to Queen's? What made you do your PhD research here?
Well, that's actually a really, really interesting question. So I've actually been here since my undergrad.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, I've lived here for quite a long time. Not only did I have a connection to the Kingston community because of that, but I also was really intrigued by the research being done at Queen's, where I wanted to stay because of, for example, my supervisor's focus on green and sustainable chemistry. That was a primary reason for staying, but also just my ties to the Kingston community, wanting to give back, learning. All of the things that I learned during my undergrad, my skills, and wanting to contribute, for example, as like a TA. And truly that's what made me want to stay at Queen's for my graduate studies.
Oh, very nice. It's a nice place to live, right? I've been here quite a few years as well. And once you're in Kingston and you start to build those relationships and build that community, it's a very nice place to be.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. Even the lake. Stunning.
Yes, and we're recording in the summer, so Lake Ontario and the pier are at peak beauty right now.
Yes.
But you mentioned that your research and your supervisor's research area is really what made you want to stay for the research side of things. So could you tell us a little bit about what your research topic is for your PhD?
Yeah, so I dabble in a few things, but primarily it's about one project in particular, which is removing contaminants from water systems. And so that's pretty profoundly important, especially in our society. We use a whole variety of different types of products, personal care products, all the way to pharmaceuticals, and those end up in our water systems. And we need to find a way that we can remove them in an inclusive manner of not just a few chemicals, but say hundreds, but also in a way that is sustainable and not causing more waste. And that's particularly something that my supervisors focus on, which is creating innovative ideas, not only to solve the problem, but make sure that we're not going to cause a subsequent problem or another challenge that we then also then have to overcome later on.
Okay, that's tricky, right? Because if you find this great solution, but then, you know, 10 years down the line, we find out that it's actually causing something else. We've just shifted the problem. We haven't necessarily solved it. So
exactly.
So what process are you working on to solve this problem of these contaminants or chemicals in our in our water?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I particularly look at using membranes, and so that's because there's other types of ways you can remove contaminants, biological, chemical, physical, and some other methods. They can degrade the compound and make potentially more toxic derivatives than parent. So membranes will avoid that concern. And so what I do is I use, say, forward osmosis, which is very similar to reverse osmosis. So reverse osmosis, you use applied hydraulic pressure, you force water molecules through a semi-permeable membrane, and you get your pure water. But forward osmosis is a little unique in that instead of using an applied pressure, you use a solution that actually will exhibit that function instead. So it's a chemical that you're going to be using, or a draw, what we call it, instead of applied pressure. So it's the same application. You end up with your pure water. But I particularly look at membranes just to avoid the degradation and potentially more toxic derivatives.
Okay, yes, because I think many of our listeners may have heard of reverse osmosis in water treatment, or I think some of those personal filters at home are quite popular, those systems. Yeah. I think the Berkey, is that the one that everyone...
You can attach it to your faucet and your sink. Rural areas use it as well, definitely.
Yeah, so that's familiar, but the forward osmosis process that you're doing is different, as you've explained. So what are some of the benefits of using this process that you've developed, and what are some of the results that you're seeing so far?
Yeah. So with the benefits of using the particular system that I am using is that you can control your membrane size, so what you can allow to go through, so you can target smaller species. And then on top of that, with forward osmosis, you can actually not require, say, a really high applied pressure, which can actually damage the system or might not be able to be sustainable, dependent upon whatever system you're talking about. And the results that we're seeing are really quite impressive, where we're seeing greater than 99% removal of some types of contaminants from water. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty profound. I particularly focus on pharmaceuticals. There's a whole bunch of different types of contaminants that we can introduce into our water systems, like even soap. Soap counts as one, but we should still be using soap. That's important for hygiene. But we can't always avoid putting a contaminant into our water systems, and pharmaceuticals are kind of one of those. But it's a really, really big branch of different types of contaminants. So I primarily look at removing those from the systems. But yeah, we're seeing pretty good results on that front.
Wow. I mean, I think in some places, well, a 99% and above efficiency rate is, I think, something that any scientist would dream of. So it sounds like that is an excellent result you're having so far. And what are some of the, you mentioned pharmaceutical contaminants, but what are some of the common contaminants that you are working to remove in your research?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So for example, one of the pharmaceuticals, which is I think quite commonly known, as like acetaminophen, and even if you think like Tylenol, Advil, all of those, looking primarily at one of them, say for example acetaminophen, to remove that from water. It's important we look at removing different types of pharmaceuticals because they don't always act the same in the system. We might see greater than 99% for some, but maybe we see above 90 for others. But we can improve them compared to other systems. It has a lot of interconnecting properties and effects on one another. It's pretty dynamic. But that's like one that we primarily look at. We're able to actually improve the removal of, say, for that one type of pharmaceutical, the acetaminophen, greatly compared to other systems that are currently out in literature right now.
Oh, well, that is very exciting. Yeah. And what inspired you to pursue this particular field of research in the first place?
Actually, that's a funny story.
Okay, yeah.
So I was actually brought on for a completely different project to start my PhD.
as research goes, right?
Oh, yeah, big time. And that project was going in a different direction, and I stumbled upon something. Really, really cool property. I went to my supervisor and said, this is really cool. Okay, what can we do with this? And my supervisor introduced me to another professor, Dr. Pascal Champagne, whom introduced me to contaminants in water. I became so interested in the topic. We collaborate on ORF-related projects. That's how the project actually kind of spun. It wasn't something I was originally brought on for, and it kind of shows how even in say a project where things might not be going the way that you're anticipating, you can always find a way to find something new and exciting and find a different application. So that's how I got introduced into water treatment and water systems, and I wouldn't have wanted it any other way.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that you were able to make these connections, and now you have some really exciting work on your hands. And from the way you've been, I mean, as you've described, water and the quality of our water is incredibly important to daily life and life on the planet in general. So where do you see your research being the most applicable in Canadian society or in the world in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a few answers with that. Yeah, it depends on how you apply the technology, but rural areas, as an example, even in common society, at maybe the end stage of a wastewater treatment plant, or even in water treatment plants as an end stage for just further purification. So those are some areas where it could be implemented really nicely. But getting to that point is kind of getting into policy and making a change on that front in society, where there is incentive, say, for companies or industry to mm-hmm. implement all these beautiful technologies that us researchers mm-hmm. and grad students and we're all really passionate about and investigating. Because it does. It takes a lot of time and money to incorporate, say, something in industry or something new mm-hmm. if there's already infrastructure standing. But it does tie back a little bit to policy. So if policy changes and contaminants, right, contaminants of emerging concern, they're unregulated and unmonitored chemicals in our environment. And so it can be difficult if you don't monitor or manage them, right? It can be difficult even, I would say, for industry to maybe be able to even implement a system because you have to do the testing of the water. You have to make mm-hmm. sure you're under a certain limit. I do think that there's a lot of traction, definitely an attention on the importance of water mm-hmm. and purification. The United Nations has highlighted that through their sustainable developmental goals, especially number 6 for water treatment, mm-hmm. hygiene. Water is a human right. Mm-hmm. It'll take more traction, I think, in implementation in society once we really get a handle in improving those policies.
Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, if things aren't measured, how do we
how
do we make change if you know policymakers or decision makers don't necessarily know what's happening?
Exactly. And and that even gets to being able to detect mm-hmm. the amount of, say, a contaminant or a pharmaceutical in the water systems, right? Because they might not be at a very easily detectable amount. Mm. They're in our environment around some of them in the part per trillion level. And so there's even researchers working on improving detection, right? Mm. So it's a multifaceted problem, I think, that a lot of people are working to solve, mm-hmm. which is incredibly important and really shows the importance as well as on collaborative efforts.
No, and it sounds like your research is quite collaborative, right? You've got Dr. Champagne, Dr. Cunningham, and Dr. Jessup, and I'm sure many others mm-hmm. in your field as well. So what are some ways that you think that you yourself or maybe other early career researchers can get your research into the hands of or on the radar of policymakers or decision makers? Like how do you think, what are some things that you think grad students or other early career researchers mm-hmm. can do to help bring attention, further attention and potentially really great solutions to policymakers on water quality?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I think it's making awareness of the topic. Mm. I think that's incredibly important. Then even if you're really truly passionate, maybe even look into to actually becoming a policymaker mm-hmm. and as you would be knowledgeable in that field. It can be multifaceted, right? So mm-hmm. one of the things that I currently do with a colleague of mine is we go and we teach about contaminants to schools.
Oh, very cool. Yeah,
in the greater Kingston region. Mm-hmm. So spreading awareness on that front as mm-hmm. an example. You can try and see if your particular project is innovative and new and potentially could be patented, mm-hmm. for example. That can garner some attention, especially for, say, a company then wanting or able to implement it. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of different ways that you can really go about it on surface level front. So those would be probably the places I'd say to start, especially in a graduate level. We're young professionals, we're starting out. So that would be probably a place to start.
Yes, and you also, as graduate students and early career researchers, have many things to do, right, including getting your dissertation.
Yes.
Getting your dissertation finished, which I know takes a lot of effort, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you're early in your profession and in your career and that there's a lot of other work happening in your field. So where do you see your field evolving in the next, 5 to 10 years? And where do you see yourself fitting into where the field is going?
Yeah. So 5 to 10 years, I do see that there is a shift in care and an importance in a positive way with society and policy in terms of acknowledging that we have contaminants in our water mm-hmm. systems. And the focus of removing those, like, for example, a lot of people talk about microplastics. They're mm-hmm. they're literally everywhere. So I do see that in that time frame, the importance will grow. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that there'll be more regulatory policies that will hopefully come out.
Okay.
I think we're on that trajectory. But it's truly just getting the right technology out there, getting the right understanding, and it that does take some time. But I think that's the trajectory of where we are. And then once we have that in place, then I believe that we'll see more technologies that have been invented in labs come into industrial settings.
Okay. So, yeah. And where do you see yourself in that? Will you be hopefully on the cutting edge of that as well?
I would like to continue to work with water treatment. It's something I'm knowledgeable and I do care about quite a bit. So I'll see where I end up. You know, it would be great to continue that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you never know where you're going to end up in 10 to 15 years, to be honest. But if I can still even be somewhat included or incorporated in the community and spreading awareness, even on my spare time, I'm more than happy to do that.
Oh, well, that is great. It's nice to see that you have this kind of vision looking forward, even if you're not sure exactly where you may be. As you said, you started your PhD in a totally different area and ended up here. So who knows what the future holds.
Exactly.
And I guess one of the challenges, right, of doing a PhD is staying dedicated and staying focused, right? It's a long process. So how do you stay motivated during long or, you know, challenging phases of your research? How do you keep progressing as, you know, something doesn't work in the lab or, you know, you're just tired? How do you keep going?
Honestly, the trick is you celebrate even the small successes. And even if you come across something that you deem is a failure, right? Even in failure, you can find something incredibly cool. And it might propel you in a different direction, which is essentially what happened to me. It's easier said than done, but just trying to keep a positive mindset and just, you know, knowing it'll work out, you put the time in, you learn from it. And that's like the beautiful thing too, is in grad school, there's going to be highs and there's going to be lows. You're grateful for the highs and you're grateful for the lows too, because you learn from them. And ultimately, when things don't work out as planned, from my personal experiences, I've learned more in those situations than in the ones where what exactly happened was supposed to happen. So if you come in with it with an open mindset, I think that helps incredibly.
Yes. And I think sometimes we forget that when you're undertaking graduate research, it's your first time doing all of these things, right? So when you first do a proposal, when you're first starting your first experiments, when you have done your first big lit review, all of those things are the first time you've ever done them. So I think having an open mindset and, you know, giving ourselves some grace as people take their first steps into research helps a lot in those challenging moments. But then, hey, sometimes it turns out you find a new a different project from something that doesn't quite go as planned. And you have an excellent idea to share with the community in chemistry, but also just society in general.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I would like to know more, because you mentioned that you do outreach in the Kingston community in classrooms. So could you tell me a little bit more about some of the work that you do with children and youth in the Kingston community?
Yeah, that's actually a really really cool story and how that all started. So about a year ago, I volunteered at Science Rendezvous through the Contaminants of Emerging Concern Research Excellence Network, CEC-REN. That's kind of the group that I ended up becoming part of. And I had such a fun time explaining things like in terms of contaminants and water to individuals of all ages.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Science Rendezvous is?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So Science Rendezvous is a really excellent opportunity for those in the general public to come and learn from a whole bunch of different types of booths that focus on different types of topics, all the way from, you know, general chemistry to engineering to geology to physics, you know, all the way to contaminants. It's a really fun, fantastic opportunity for science to meet the public, to really explain concepts and to create almost in a way interest, especially with kids. Still the love of science at an early age. So that was phenomenal to be part of. It spoofed the idea of thinking, okay, I know about contaminants in water. My colleagues do, my profs do, but there isn't really a lot of attention, or maybe this isn't taught a lot, maybe with the younger youth. So I ended up creating public outreach initiative through CEC Run as a volunteer at the time. And then it grew. We mm-hmm. visited different schools, presented, the kids loved it, did interactive activities. They were really thinking about even dyes in water systems, right? And then I ended up actually getting hired along with my colleague, Prama, she's awesome. I love working with her. And now we're actually the youth public and outreach coordinators for CEC Run.
Oh,
and
very
so,
cool.
Yeah, so we had like a school come to Chernoff. We taught them about contaminants and they went in the labs and learned. And it's just really an opportunity to just instill passion mm-hmm. and awareness, especially in the younger generations. So that way they grow up in whatever jobs they end up doing, they have that knowledge and passion for the world around them.
Oh, and what an exciting opportunity for youth to get to see advanced scientific research happening and to get mm-hmm. to learn about the process, because I'm sure a lot of kids, if they don't know someone who's already doing that work, they may have never mm-hmm. had a chance to really think about what chemistry in action looks like, and then you get to bring them to that, so that becomes an option for them in the future that maybe they didn't know existed before.
Exactly. And they have so many great questions. Mm-hmm. I remember one class we presented to, they had over 20. It was phenomenal. We're just like, yes, the interest is there. Fantastic.
Also good practice for your defense, right? Just getting peppered with questions, unexpected questions.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I hear that you're also the new vice president of the QACS chapter at Queen's. Can you tell us what QCAS is and what are some of the things that you do in that role?
Yeah, definitely. So with QACS, that's the Queen's University International Student Chapter of the American Chemical Society at Queen's. And essentially what we do is we like to focus on providing professional development opportunities for those in and around the Queen's and Kingston chemical community. Mm-hmm. We like to provide areas for people to develop, to feel included, to feel that they belong, facilitate awards, to recognize all the amazing contributions of different individuals in our community as well. And what I primarily do is support the team. I'm mm-hmm. there for everybody. We all work together, like cohesively, and we collaborate on a whole bunch of different projects. And it's a phenomenal club to be part mm-hmm. of. I've never really been a person that's ever really been part of clubs, but being part of QACS, it feels right mm-hmm. when you're able to contribute the way that we're able to in helping those around us and really lifting others up, not even just students but faculty as well. It's an amazing thing. And then also we get new members and you see the new members start to flourish and mm-hmm. grow, and you're mentoring and teaching them, and it's a phenomenal thing, definitely. But yeah, so that's typically what we do, typically how I'm involved mm-hmm. and I assist. But yeah, and we host events. Recently, we actually just hosted the event early May, which was to recognize that the Queen's University Chemistry Department signed the Green Chemistry Commitment signing on part of Beyond Benign.
Okay.
In other words, highlighting that the department is going to be implementing green chemistry teaching initiatives more in the curriculum, propelling that. And we actually had Dr. John Warner come and do a phenomenal seminar. And we had individuals from, over 5 different departments come and hear him speak and come to the networking lunch. And we always make sure to at QACS that all of our events are free of charge, just because we want to remove mm-hmm. those barriers. But it's just one of many examples of how we contribute to our community, and we try and spread knowledge, awareness, and uplift others and provide opportunity for professional development.
Oh, that sounds like a fabulous community to be a part of and to contribute to. And that large event sounds great. And like, it brought in a lot of opportunities for cross-collaboration and interdisciplinary collaboration and things like that. And you mentioned you do a lot of professional development in your role. So what are some things that QACS offers in terms of professional development to graduate students and postdocs and other early career researchers?
Yeah, that's actually funny that you bring that up, because we'll be actually having in November a professional development workshop.
Oh, very
nice. So we're going to have two speakers, and they will be discussing how do you go from academia to industry, mm-hmm. a few other topics as well. You can broadcast that and people can join in on that call to just learn, ask questions, as well as in the past, we've had a few professional development workshop as well, highlighted all the way from how do you give a presentation? How do you give a public speaking presentation in a good, productive way where you're articulating your research yourself, where people are actually going to listen to what you're saying and remember it. And then as well as all the way to CV and resume writing. So we like to try and highlight those as best we can. So those are a few examples of some professional development opportunities that we do. And then internal to us, just being able to put these into fruition helps even our members learn for professional development. So it's just great to see other members being able to grow and learn professionally as well.
Yes, it's kind of iterative, right? If you get professional development by planning professional development as well, right?
Yes, exactly. So I also just want to mention, too, another professional development initiative that QACS does actually monthly is an initiative called Monthly Mind, whereby it's quite near and dear to my heart, actually, in that we will reach out to an industrial or academic professional and ask them if they can shed light on not just what they currently do, but the unique pathway of how they got to where they are.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So showing that our pathways are not linear. Mm-hmm. They are very hilly, like a roller coaster. And it's completely okay for it to be that way. And it's a space for graduate students, undergraduate students, even professionals to go on this platform, read the stories, and kind of go, yeah, I'm not alone. This is happening to somebody else. Okay, maybe I can reach out. We've even had actually a few of the individuals that have supplied responses to this initiative even say, hey, if anybody needs to reach out or wants to talk, let them know that they can.
Oh, that's a great opportunity for networking and also for reassurance, right?
Exactly, exactly. So it's a positive space and it's meant to be an area for people to learn about professional development on that kind of front.
You've got a lot going on, doing public outreach in a few different avenues, and keeping QACS and that team supported. How do you balance all of these different things in your schedule?
That's I haven't asked that before. Honestly, I have a few to-do lists, but it comes down to just passion for what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. When you're passionate about the things that you're putting your time towards, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And time flies, but in a productive and positive way. So if you find the things that truly make you happy, at the end of the day, you feel accomplished. Mm-hmm. It can make the world a difference. So primarily that, I would say, and then a few to-do lists.
Yes, I can only imagine the many, many lists of things to go. It has been so nice to chat with you, Rachel. Thank you for doing the show, and best of luck with the rest of your research, and we would love to have you back as things progress to hear how things go.
Great. Thank you so much.
And so that is it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download this show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. Until next week, this is KM on the FM.